perhaps, you know, the world's greatest sporting precinct right in the shadows of one of the world's greatest cities.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.
Just a little bit of genius.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And I think we got to the stage of the preseason where, even though we didn't have all that much news to talk about, I think we just wanted to talk about football.
We did. I've sort of taken a bit of hiatus over the last month or two from football, still traumatised by how the last season ended. But I'm gradually rebuilding. The imminent start of the preseason has got me focused again, and I started sneaking the odd look at preseason training reports, and you know, it's just the whiff of some training the house down has just sucked me back in.
I know, and there's nothing more fun than young players burning up the track or new draftees, guys coming back from injury. It's the capacity for hope and regeneration that always gets you.
It is. It's what sucks us all back to professional sport. Actually, it was quite exciting. Because I'd taken a few months break, I didn't recognize some of the nicknames the internet people were using to describe certain players. Like, it actually took me a while to catch up with the inner lingo, and I realized why a lot of normal Richmond supporters don't read websites, because they are, after you've filtered through the sort of trolls and, you know, you concentrate on the people that really have something worthwhile saying, which is a lot of people, but they, you know, we all talk in sort of insider knowledge, and it's not very accessible.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I suppose you don't, and you don't notice that until you have a break from it for a while.
Yeah, I've forgotten. Oh, that's right. Yeah, well, that guy's our fourth guy on the Wookiee list. You know, he was a. Anyway, sorry, go on.
Well, I was just going to say I've kind of been back for a little while now. About 3 weeks ago, I started watching sort of some of my favourite selected quarters for the year. And actually, so I started off my favourite team quarters, but then, you know, I watched the third quarter of the St Kilda game just to see Ben Lennon kick a couple of goals. I'm at that stage.
That's pretty desperate because, they were good goals, but was there anything particular insight that you gained from that tape work?
Did I like watching Ben Lennon kick goals?
Well, of course you did, but did you gain any more insight than you already had?
No, not really. I watch him pretty closely the first time around.
Have you seen the video clip of the forwards training on the Richmond website?
I have seen it, yes.
The super slow motion of Tyrone Vickery hand passing. It's exciting.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Look, I've been watching training videos. I've been watching draft videos. Like, it's fair to say I'm ready for the new season to start.
Is there any, on a second or third look at the draftees, is there anything else that stood out to you?
Look, I think anyone who is questioning why Callum Moore is being converted to a defender needs to watch sort of, there are highlight videos on YouTube you can watch that are just essentially an edited video of every time they touch the ball in one of the national championship games. And he has some shots for the goal that look like you've put the football inside a tennis ball machine and it's just firing it off at random angles. It in no way gives you confidence in his kicking for goal. So I'm pretty comfortable in the decision to make him a key back after seeing that.
But he's going to have to kick through, he's going to have to kick into, you know, often you have to make the hardest kick to make is that kick off half back, so that's not particularly confidence inspiring either.
No, but I mean, he's a beautiful athlete, and yeah, you can say that. Say the same about a number of our players. I do. If you had to pick one to make of the sort of the teenage draftees, if you had to pick one of them to make an impact, I think Oleg Markov would be my choice for this year. Now,
but apparently, nicknamed Lego. Apparently,
I don't mind it.
But yes, and why does he stand out to you as someone who'll make an impact?
Well, he's got both. He's got a defined position. Like he's a half forward, flank, pushes up the ground, goes back. He's a really good athlete, and apparently has settled in well to training. So, you know, that's, and it's not a particular position of strength for the team. So there's opportunity there as well, which is perhaps less so for others, although not Daniel Rioli.
Just going back to Moore, on the upside, you do hear absolute, you know, unless he's kicking, you do hear great things about his talent. He's definitely a first-round draft pick with amateur footballer's kicking ability. Anyway, Jaden Short apparently is also training quite well.
I know, I'm fond of that. There's a group of sort of small forward mids, because another one that the club highlighted was Daniel Butler, who, you know, first season was essentially a write-off, missed almost the whole pre-season with a knee injury, I think only debuted in the last third of the season, really didn't make much of an impact. So he was someone we both quite liked coming out of juniors, so yeah, nice for an encouraging report there. There's been some nice words said about Daniel Rioli and his skill level, which is nice. I mean, he's a first-round draft pick, although not, you know, a particularly good year, but, you know, it's better to hear positive things than not. I did, though, did a bit of research, because it did strike me, he's 65 kilos, and that's pretty light, and wasn't until I did some research and realised it's been since 1971 that a player that light has played a game of senior football for the Richmond Football Club.
Hmm. So he may struggle. I've heard that he has struggled a bit sometimes in match simulation. So, So I guess we should keep expectations modest of his senior games.
Yeah. Look, he's, you know, the actually Billy forward pocket rover called Billy Brown was the last player that skinny, in case you were wondering.
I wasn't, but that's interesting, and it would be pretty frightening to be that small on the field in the 60s without video review and where people had much sharper elbows than they do today.
Oh, no, look, hats off to him. He played 130 games and kicked 120 goals, so he could clearly play a bit.
And look after himself. Mm.
And look after himself. Yeah, the question for General Rioli will be is if, you know, aren't people going to be able to shrug his tackles every time he tries to go near it? That's the question you'd have to worry about.
Yeah. So, and I think I owed it to Ripplestick and if not BLX, to guys who posted reports. So apparently, I've heard reports about Conker looking super fit, his arms more defined, won a repeat sprint drill.
Really?
Yeah, training. And presumably he was against more than competition and Ivan Soldo and Reece McKenzie. And has been running. He's been seen running laps of the MCG car park after training. So if anyone is sort of and Bill Simmons always mocks us in the NBA, but if anyone's having the preseason of his career thus far, it's Reece Conker.
I was trying to work out, has Reece Conker ever had a full preseason? And I'm not certain that he has. It's been quite remarkable for somebody drafted in 2010, but it's been a pretty interrupted career.
I think he was actually tearing it up early in last preseason, and then he got injured again in typical Reece Conker style. So, you know, this is uncharted territory for him. So let's hope it follows through. It keeps up. He's got a month. He's got almost a month to go before the first game and first preseason game, and knock on wood, he can keep up the good form. But it's interesting, Nick. I tweeted today, but I was reflecting on the fact that Essendon's getting nothing out of Heppel this year, and if you, so the first touch Conker gets in round one will be more contribution than Essendon will get from Happel all year. And because Pollock and Caddy, who are both arguably better players, but you know, are not on the teams that drafted him, he will, as long as he plays some footy, he will be the only person playing footy for the team that originally drafted him of the four guys that went from fourth to eighth in the 2010 draft. So,
I know it's a funny one.
Long bow, but you know, more importantly, let's hope he, you know, if he could just be, you know, average to decent midfielder, it would be a big help to our team.
I know it's a funny thing, you know, picks 10 and 12 from that year, Daniel Gorridge and Lucas Cook have both been delisted, and pick 11, Tom Lynch is a gun.
Yeah, it's a funny old draft, and you know, Heppel was arguably best player in it and went relatively late for that. You know, it's but the main thing is he's actually injury free, so it'll be interesting to see how he goes. I am prepared to start considering him forgiving him for the turnover late in the final. Other players that have sort of stood out to you in the preseason?
Well, it's hard not to be impressed by the sheer size of the guns being sported by my boy Liam McBean. Like, it's I hear he's already had to register with Victoria Police them as deadly weapons.
As a lethal weapon, yeah. Yeah. I must say, when people say Alex Rance is looking really shredded and ripped, is it just that people have forgotten that he's really shredded and ripped? And, you know, because guys, obviously, they look best in preseason because they, you know, that's when they get the most time to work out without injuries. So, is it really exceptional, or does Alex Rance just look like a ridiculously, annoyingly handsome Adonis all the time?
I have no recollection. He was a little bit skinnier when he first came at the club, but honestly, if you had to rank players at the Richmond Football Club in terms of their ability to cover themselves in baby oil and do bicep curls in front of the mirror, he would have been my choice for at least 6 years now.
Yep. And on that homoerotic note, let's move on to Corey Ellis, who I talked a bit in the trade period about being really important that he gets a decent preseason. Looks like he is. He looks like he's doing full training.
I know. This is one of those no news is good news. I just want him to do every training session, you know, do all the skill work, do all the fitness work. You know, no news is good news. I'm very encouraged by that. And, well, hardly Robinson Crusoe on that. It's fair to say that Corey has quite a devoted internet following for someone who, you know, hasn't played very much.
Probably had less than 50 touches in AFL games. But the sort of the obsession with his fitness, it's just been mentioned in passing that he's doing full training. Hardly anyone sort of focused on it, nor has the club. But, long may it stay. The one that has got focused and has been mentioned in the Herald Sun is Chris Yaron had a calf injury, had supposedly, I did hear other rumours, he's not one, you know, perhaps didn't come to the club in, you know, had a good off season, and has had to work on his fitness. And that was, not that the club confirmed that he came out of shape, but it confirmed that he was doing exclusively fitness work, until very recently. So we'll watch that space. But, you know, what did you expect from Chris Yaron? He's on his second team. He's a former Australian. He's on his second team. That usually happens for a reason.
Yeah. I'm encouraged. He was only out for a relatively short amount of time. You hope he's sort of got the base to work into it. Actually, speaking of which, you know, Ben Lennon seems to have escaped his bout of glandular fever relatively lightly. That he's back in full training and looking pretty good. So yeah, it's encouraging so far. As I said, sometimes the absence of news is a good thing because it just means everyone's participating, building up fitness, no catastrophic injuries. Like, All that can happen is for things to go wrong, essentially, at this time of year.
Which is a perfect segue into the big issue that happened in the off-season.
Well, yes. Speaking of things going wrong...
Speaking of... A friend of mine once described Shane Warne when they were playing as that the ACB probably wished that they could just transport Shane Warne from ground to ground in a helicopter and not allow him to interact with the real world at all, because, you know, inside the confines of a cricket oval, the man's a genius and can do no wrong.
Mm.
Real world, not so much. I think Dustin Martin's definitely in that category as well.
Well, I think it is a different category. I always read Caroline Wilson's articles very closely when she writes on topics like this, because she's better linked than any other journo. But she was saying how the club was, you know, waiting for the investigation to play out, but also was very conscious of the risks for Dusty that he really doesn't cope well with the demands of being a functioning adult when he's outside of having a structured environment that football provides him.
Mm. I don't... The incident as a whole, I wasn't there. I don't have a hot take on it. I sort of thought about it from a lot of perspectives, you know, just trying to sort of understand it. I never fully got my head around it, but sort of thinking about, would this have come up, you know, if Dusty wasn't famous? Well, probably not, but, you know, Dusty also gets paid $500,000 to $700,000 a year because people care about what he does. You know, you're not going to get the sort of price of the game in a sense. So I never, there's all these different thoughts in my head about the incident itself and how it was handled in the media. And it is interesting, the sort of the, if you can, and I don't have an ultimate conclusion of this, the way sort of, I'm not necessarily sure this is a good thing, the way that how most Essendon people blindly followed everything the club did, whereas sort of a former Richmond legend was sort of leading the charge of people who were, you know, and for perfectly reasonable reasons were wanting a very stiff penalty. And I'm not saying right or wrong here. I just thought it was different cultures of club.
Mm.
Ultimately, when I came down to it, I must admit, one thing I think is clear that Dusty was being a bit of a knob. So he really needs to work on that, but, you know, he's still a young man. The other thing was, I must admit, and, you know, obviously I'm on Dusty's side, I'm biased, and I'm careful of listening to Bill Simmons, for people who don't know, he's an American podcaster, talk about being a New England Patriots fan, talking about Bradygate and how people so quickly go to conspiracy theory, so I'm very careful not to be one of those people. But it did occur to me when I was explaining to a friend who's a HR professional, but also a big Man City fan, so understands sport, but not AFL. I said, in the end, it looks like he was exonerated. The club and the police did a full investigation and found he didn't have a case to answer other than, you know, basically D&D. And the sort of the police in a football mad town and the football club do an investigation and find there has no case to answer is not, when you're a Victorian and you know that Victorian's a bit of a lefty town, it probably would get investigated properly. It sounds more impressive than it actually does when you say it out loud to someone who doesn't know the circumstance. So I'm determinedly not taking a strong position on this because I wasn't there. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I mean, the exonerate, I wouldn't even use the word exonerated, just because, you know, from what I understand, the woman involved didn't want to proceed with it anymore, and I can perfectly understand that, because, you know, there's frankly nothing in it for her. I can completely understand wanting to move on. So the two takeaways I had from it were, A, the rush to judgment in this type of incidents is always a really bad idea. As frustrating as it is, and as antithetical to the current media culture, you just have to hold off until, you know, the facts become known. And it's also really hard to get this stuff right, that, you know, the Richmond Football Club has been vocal about trying to do a better job of this stuff, and, you know, seems to have acknowledged that they could have done better in this instance as well. It is genuinely hard. Oh, and actually the final thing of Robbo castigating others for rushing to judgment was the biggest piece of hypocrisy I've ever seen in my life.
In fairness to Robbo, Robbo's probably suffering a bit at the moment, quietly weeping at the shrine of James Heard that he assembled over the years. Anyway, you said the rush to judgment. Well, before the facts emerge, I still don't know what the facts are, truly, so I'm not going to judge. I think I might have to perpetually suspend judgment. But Nick, on a tangential but related matter, it was an interesting story that Benny was asked to apply for the NRL CEO job and elected not to interview. But it's interesting that our CEO's reputation has spread far and wide, even to the darkest and most uncultured of sporting cultures.
No, I was actually having a drink with someone from Football Federation Australia in at a work thing, and talking to them about the difference for David Gallop in coming over from the NRL to FFA, where there are certainly some challenges in administering Australian soccer, but that he probably didn't have to have a scheduled part of each and every workday where he discussed the ongoing legal matters involving NRL players.
Yeah, and you know, any sport where Roy Masters is your lead journalist is you've got trouble. But you know, good on Benny for his recognised that you could take it as many why he didn't take the interview for many reasons. But of course, one of the favourite internet explanations is that he's penciling for bigger and better things in the AFL.
Mm.
Anyway,
plus I heard a little whisper that the NRL are trying to recruit on the cheap a bit as well. The salary they've been touting around would be around half that that the Gil McLaughlin's on.
Interesting. If I was Richmond, I'd be paying Benny quite a lot. I'd be paying him enough to have an incentive to stay around for the end of this year. If we lose the CEO, this year will either be a year of magnificent triumph and there'll be victory parades up and down Punt Road, or there'll be, well, not necessarily if you finish third, but there will be in the hearts of Richmond supporters, you know, a third would be finishing third or something like that would be considered a massive victory by most of us. But if that doesn't happen, the streets will run red with blood, and it will be good to have a CEO to manage that transition for another year. Anyway, so I hope we're paying Benny heaps because quite a great deal, because I think we need him for another 24 months.
Anyway, I've been keeping an eye on the different football media that, again, helps us through these dark times. Did you see the Rowan Connolly's article on the five best home and away wins of the modern era?
Yeah, good article. What did you? I had a few. I was going to mention a few games that I thought I could have included, but I would just give it the credit. The 2006 Richmond Adelaide game at the Telstra Dome that he mentioned. I thought that was a really big win, and you know, it was sort of why we hired Plough for those tactical genius games. It was similar to the game where the Bulldogs beat the Essendon in what was it, round 21 on Friday night footy when they were unbeaten. You know, it was sort of it was peak Plough, or a clever game plan to punch up and beat a better team. And it was a very disciplined game. Wasn't very good fun to watch, but I was glad that game got mentioned.
Some of them were interesting. I really hadn't thought of that. You mentioned round four in 1995, when actually the week before's game, when we beat Hawthorn out at Waverley Park with one of our lowest winning scores ever, when we kicked 4-16 to 5-4 to beat them in a monsoon, and that was the first time we'd beaten them in a decade.
Richo took something like 14 marks.
Richo took 14 marks. Yeah, so that for me, actually, more so than the North Melbourne game. The North Melbourne game was certainly more fun as a spectacle to watch, but I really felt like we'd got over the hump with that Hawthorn game.
Yeah, it was good that he included, you sort of had to include one of those games. So I guess the question was, which one from the 95 season? Now, the thing that surprised me that was in recent memory, one of the two Hawthorn, big Hawthorn wins we've had, either the one in OR East, where Richo was best on ground and we were the last team to beat them, before they won the grand final. That was a really satisfying game.
That was
game.
Pretty fun. Yeah.
Jay Schultz played really well that day, actually. And the one in 14, was it? It was 13 where we beat them, and that was sort of meant statistically we were almost certainly to make the finals. And we absolutely flogged them. That was a deeply satisfying game.
Yeah, they both rank really high on my list. We've actually talked about this game before, but speaking of beating Hawthorn, the one Princess Park in round 5, 1985, where we beat them 188 to 149, with Michael Roach kicking 10 goals and a near best on ground performance from I think it was a 20-year-old Michael Pickering. If we were doing a podcast in 1985, if they had podcasts, we would have pretty much lost our mind.
Yeah, it would have been tough to do the podcast in those days. I suspect they didn't print stats in the paper or anything like that. Certainly no footy wire. The last one I'll mention was it 98, where we beat Carlton in the last round of the season at Princess Park by 2 points to deny them a spot in the final race.
That was genuinely satisfying. I remember that with considerable fondness.
I think I watched that on video several times. I remember having a recording of that and, you know, watching it again and again. Yes. So anyway, good on him for making the list.
Yeah. Well, very pleasing. Nothing from 2001, which that was a pretty deeply satisfying year, that one.
Well, the game that you'd pick would be the last round of the season where we beat Essendon to finish top four. Now, what that did was people forgot it because we got flogged in the next week by Essendon, so Essendon probably rope-a-doped us a bit. But actually, if you're going to, it's not really... In the list, they included the round 22 victory against Sydney last year where we were playing... Sydney had rested four of their best players, four or five, whatever it was.
Was it? It was a pretty good fun win.
It was exciting, but you know, if you're not going to, you really should. If you're going to include that win, you should include the win in 2001, where we beat a very good team to make the top four. It shouldn't be diminished by the context of how hard the other team was trying. Anyway.
Yeah, I see your point. Look, it was a bit of fun though. Are there any sort of personally games that maybe meant more because you were there, or any other reason rather than sort of broader significance?
The Hawks game you mentioned, where we beat them at Waverley after all those years, I mean, that was personally very significant. In 93, where we started playing good footy again after so many years of crapness, there were a few good victories in there that I could remember. Any for you that stand out?
The 2000, I was trying to think of one of the games in the when Richo went to the wing and nearly won a Brownlow medal. That was pretty outstandingly good fun.
Yeah, it was the year we beat Geelong down at Caninia Park. That was pretty sweet. And also the last year when we came back from behind and beat Sydney in Sydney. That was just such a brave win, actually. I remember being quite emotional afterwards.
Yeah, good times. So I sort of had a final topic I wanted to talk about because, you know, the AFL off-season never stops, but One thing that I just was having a look at which players are coming out of contract this year, because they're always, I think, ones that you have to keep an eye on. The club has to make a decision on them at the end of the year. I actually realised that, so we've got 13 ruckman and key position players on the list at the moment, and three of them have contracts for next year. Now, of those three, that includes Alex Rance and Jack Riewoldt, who are our best key back and our best key forward. And for reasons we've never quite worked out, our fourth best key defender in Todd Elton. But everyone else is out of contract. All the ruckmen, all the key forwards other than Jack, all the key rest of the key backs. And I think it's sort of both opportunity and risk, I think. I think somebody's going to toss a lot of money at Ty Vickery, which is takes a little bit of getting my head around when you consider how frustrating he's been. But it also, I also had the thought of, well, does that mean that we have the option of, would they consider something as radical as walking away from both Hampson and Marriage and just tossing all that money at Griffin from Fremantle, for instance? Like, yeah, it's sort of, it sort of means anything can happen out of this year.
It does, and I notice Hampson is, the training reports I've heard, Hampson is not 100%, so you can't see, and you've got to think at his stage in life, he's had so many leg injuries now that they're probably going to be chronic, so is there really an upside to Hampson? Maybe not. He's just a decent backup.
Well, I mean, as everyone has a price, and he's probably on quite reasonable money, but, you know, can you... he's not going to get that type of money from anyone else, so I'm open to the idea of re-signing him on a cheaper contract, but it is... Troy Chaplin's out of contract, Dave Asprey, Ben Griffiths, Liam McBean. There's, you know, I'm wondering if it's almost like a survival of the fittest, where those that play well will either get re-signed on better contracts, or other clubs are going to come chasing for them, and I think some of the rest are going to be sacrificed to make way to pay for the ones that do well.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, isn't it? Because there's no obvious successes coming up. There's been no first round key position player drafted for a few years, so there's no obvious person waiting in the ring. The wings.
We don't need to recruit either a number one key back and key forward. That is a nice situation to be in.
It would be good to have one more promising youth key position player, though. I think Todd, particularly as a
key back. Like I think in terms of, I'd be really surprised if we went out and tried to recruit a key forward from another club. But I could see a key back.
Yeah, we key back, or we appear not to be trying
or
to
ruck.
Yeah, we appear not to be trying to convert Griffiths backwards, so that really leads to either Asprey gets kept on as the long-term replacement to Chaplin.
As Troy Chaplin, yeah.
Or, and we keep going that way. But the ruck is the, as you pointed out, the ruck is where I think we really need, you know, we don't have a number one ruckman for 2017 unless Marich is Dickley. You know, he might get another contract because of his supreme work ethic and leadership, but you can't realistically have a plan A that's Marich as your number one ruckman in 2017. So a lot of balls in the air there, isn't it? But things haven't really changed in one way, though. Things haven't changed that much from last year. We still don't know whether Vickery or Griffiths is the answer.
Well, Vickery had a much better season. That's
he did.
He kicked a lot more goals. Yeah, I think Big Ben's at a real crossroads, and it pains me to say it, but I think McBean's got to take a step forward, or he's going to get traded.
Well, that's as on that heavy contemplative note. That's as good as knows any to end on.
I know. Look, we've managed to talk for more than half an hour with barely a skerrick of news to keep us fed. I just personally cannot wait even for the dubious information that you get out of an intra-club game.
Yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm looking to see how the Kane Lambert friendship can, you know, just truly blossom and what that means on the field.
I know. I frankly have in mind something like with the Bowden brothers, where they would just instinctively look for each other, regardless of where the other was in the field.
Yeah, that was some good times. All right, I'm Andy.
I'm Nick.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
I used to love the roar of the crowd. Taken by Wildcard there. Kick it inside.